We have other sensors that are able to measure the temperature based on different physical principles. One of them is the so-called conversion between temperature and resistance. For example, in thermoresistances, depending on the particular material that is employed, the temperature variation can affect the electron's average path, so as modifying the resistance of a conductive material. In this case, in fact, the thermal agitation, the thermal vibration, let's say, of the particles in their orbit trajectories will increase with the temperature, so as to represent an obstacle to the passage of the current itself. In other words, in such a kind of materials corresponding to an increment in the temperature, we will have a greater resistance because in these materials the thermal agitation effect with the increasing of the temperature is prevalent, but is not enough, is not sufficient to make the charges surrounding the nucleus to escape from the orbit. This effect instead is present in the semiconductors. In other words, the particles that are in the orbit with respect to the nucleus, when temperature augments, escape from the orbit and become themselves part of the flowing current. So less collisions and an increment in the current will correspond to a decrease in the overall resistance of the material. In other words, we have seen that basically the same physical phenomenon can cause different consequences depending on the materials that we are considering. We will apply such considerations in two transducers that are called PTC and NTC, positive temperature coefficient transducers and negative temperature coefficient transducers. In the first class of this one, the so-called PTC, the effect that is prevalent is the number of the collisions between the free electrons and the crystal lattice. When augmenting the temperature, this brings to have a greater resistance. The dependence between the resistance and the temperature can be expressed by the formula written in slide 70, into which we can see that the resistance is equal to a certain value considered reference for such a kind of materials, R0, multiplied 1 plus factor alpha time T minus T0. So alpha is basically a sensibility factor of the transducer. It can be obtained through the derivative function of the resistance with respect to the temperature, normalizing it with R0. R0 and T0 are the reference values for the particular PTC that is considered. In other words, R0 is the value of the resistance of this kind of material at the reference temperature T0, and clearly this couple of values is different with respect to the particular material considered. What it is, however, important to notice is the value of alpha. In fact, if we are able to obtain alpha equal to the reverse of a suitable temperature, expressed of course in Kelvin degrees, we can replace it in the previous recipe that we have written, so to have that the resistance is equal to R0 multiplied by 1 plus T minus T0 divided by T0, or like written in the slide, TK0, where K expresses the Kelvin representation of the temperature. But the overall result will be that the resistance that we measure at the extremities of the material is equal to R0 times T, the temperature, divided by TK0. In other words, the output resistance is proportional to the temperature, and this means that the transducer can be used like a thermometer. So, the positive temperature coefficient transducer is able to work in both the modes, like a sensor that provides the difference in temperatures between a reference point and the real temperature present into an environment, and also like a thermometer with an absolute dependence on the real temperature. The PTC is linear in typical temperature ranges. Its main limit is that typically does not work beyond 100 degrees, so we can consider it for normal temperature ranges. Its sensibility is very good. Another transducer that is often employed in industrial applications is the so-called negative temperature coefficient. In such a case, the effect that is prevalent is the number of free moving charges that augment when increasing the temperature. This means that more free charges will be present into the conductive material, and this corresponds to lower resistance with an increment of, let's say, the current that is flowing across the conductive material itself. This is called Steinhardt law, and is a typical behavior that can be found in semiconductors. The law that relates the value of the resistance with the temperature is exponential, and is written in slide 71, both represented also with a diagram. And features R0, again a reference value for the resistor at a certain temperature T0, that multiplies the exponential function with argument minus B, B is a suitable parameter, that multiplies 1 divided by T0 minus 1 divided by T. Okay. The first consideration that we can make is that this transducer is strongly non-linear. But we can, let's say, limit the damages if we consider the central area of the diagram into which the curve is not so much different from a line. In other words, this slide could be approximated with a linear behavior. But if we want to consider big ranges of temperature, clearly the response is not linear. However, if we consider the sensibility, in other words, if we evaluate the derivative function of such a kind of relationship, we have the possibility of, let's say, establishing another alpha factor. We write alpha because we want to establish a comparison with the previously mentioned PTC, where alpha was the sensibility normalized with respect to the reference resistor. In this case, alpha is equal to minus B divided the squared temperature multiplied by the exponential function with argument minus B that multiplies 1 on T0 minus 1 on T. It is interesting to evaluate such a kind of sensibility in the reference temperature T0, where we obtain minus B divided T0 power 2. So, since the B factor usually is set around 1000-2000, we obtain a very greater sensibility for the NTC device with respect to PTC. Also, the denominator in the sensibility of the NTC is T power 2. This high sensibility motivates a different usage for the NTC device with respect to the previous one. If we are in the linear zone, okay, we can measure it as temperature sensor, let's say. But considering its high sensibility, we can use it like a thermostat. That is, if we are in the reference temperature T0, it is clear that when moving away from it, both incrementing or decrementing the temperature or diminishing the temperature, we will have a voltage that is very consistent, very robust. And this can be used to highlight the situation and to, let's say, activate some alarm to perform a certain action through the microprocessor. But what it is important is that since the sensibility is very high, even a very small variation in the temperature can cause sensible, a strong reaction in terms of output voltage. That is, even the smallest variation in the temperature can be revealed by such a kind of device. And this suggests to use it indeed as a thermostat device that feels if the particular condition, the particular desired, we could say, condition that is to keep the process at that particular temperature is respected or not. As we have said, NTC sensors are very often employed to continuously monitoring the temperature. Such a kind of transducer present a sensibility much higher than thermal resistances without any need of further electronic circuits, since the signal-to-noise ratio is very high and the parasite effects of the connection cables can be neglectable. On the other hand, in case of large variations in temperature, NTC thermistors are greatly not linear. Therefore, correction circuits are necessary, or even lookup table stored in the microprocessor memory to make their response linear or to perform suitable numerical interpolations through the microprocessor. PTC sensors work in a more tight interval and typically are used to protect devices or circuits by overloads or shocks due to overheating. In this case, thanks to their high gain and to their free shield answer, they are provided with a logic output circuit that signals the overcoming of a predefined temperature. PTCs work as detector of thermal threshold coupled with suitable calibrated comparators. Finally, in slide 73, the so-called integrated temperature transducers are shown that are very suitable for small temperature variation measurements and due to their low power consumption for embedded applications. Consider that as shown in the picture, they consist mainly on diodes and current generators, so the typical range of temperatures they can feature is from minus 40 Celsius degrees up to 50 Celsius degrees, but let's say the real usage interval is a little less large, let's say. The transducer exploits the property of diodes to be dependent on the temperature. In particular, we know that considering the relationship between the current that crosses a diode and the voltage at its extremities, we can write that this current is equal to the inverse polarization current, IDO, multiplying the exponential function E, where the argument is the voltage at the edges of the diode divided by the Boltzmann constant multiplied by the temperature and divided by the value of the charge, an electron charge typically. All this exponential function typically is diminished by 1, but in this particular case we will set the usage of the diode in area into which the exponential value is very greater than 1, so as to neglect it in such a kind of expression. Looking at the circuit, we see that we have two diodes. Both are fed with currents provided by suitable generators, and we don't enter into the details about them. The two currents will respect the previously explained formula, and the difference of the voltages that can be read at the two anodes of the diodes is proportional to k times t divided by e, the natural logarithm of the ratio between the two currents. If the two generators provide constant currents, in this recipe every parameter is constant except the temperature. So we have an output voltage that is very, very linearly related to the value of the temperature, and this shows another possible usage of the transducer as a pure thermometer. Another characteristic that makes it to be appreciated and suggests its usage is the relatively small dimensions that make again suitable such a family of transducers for embedded applications. The output voltages are present on two separate wires, so to bring the information proportional to the temperature to an analog to digital converter, a differential operational amplifier will be necessary to provide really the difference between the two voltages in the two wires. In slide 74, we see some solutions that provide the measure of the pressure based, in any case, on the strain gauge principle. The first one is shown in the left upper part of the slide and envisions the presence of a suitable proof chamber into which the fluid or the gas that must be measured is inserted. In one of the faces of this chamber, a window is carried out, and in the window a foil is mounted to separate the internal environment of the chamber with the external one. In the foil, internally, a strain gauge is mounted, externally, another one is applied. So the two strain gauges will provide the difference between the internal pressure of the fluid that has been considered and the external one that is clearly the atmospheric. Notice, and the figure clearly shows it, that the internal strain gauge is, in the particular example that we considered, where the internal pressure is greater than the external one, the internal strain gauge is compressed, while the external one is lengthened. This means that the variation of resistance for the external is positive and for the internal one is negative. Again, we will mount the couple of strain gauges, better to say we will connect the couple of the strain gauges into a Wheatstone bridge, so as to have a differential measurement that will highlight the differential components, cancelling, eliminating the common components into the signal. That is, the output signal will be twice the variation of the resistance due to the pressure difference between inside and outside the chamber, and those components due to the sensibility of the strain gauges to environmental factors will be eliminated. Of course, a calibration phase is required, so a known pressure must be applied to such a measurement system to determine the proportionality coefficient between the pressure, better the difference in pressure between the internal chamber and the external world with respect to the unitary deformation of the strain gauge itself. In other applications, it is more convenient to determine a distribution of pressure, typically two-dimensional, instead of a difference in pressures considering only one direction, like in the previous case. For example, let's imagine to be on board of an aerostatic balloon. In this case, the measure of the internal pressure to the balloon is more conveniently obtained by a geometry in the shape of the transducer that collects pressures in several directions according to the typical spheric distribution of the pressure in a closed object like a balloon it is. So, for example, we could consider the so-called daisy petal strain gauge shown in the lower left part of the slide to measure those spherical deformations into which we are interested. The measure provided by the transducer at the two extremities will collect all the directions into which the pressure is spread, corresponding to all the petal of the strain gauge. In this sense, the provided measure is an average of all the components. But clearly, in such a case, this measurement is more affordable than a pressure evaluated in only one direction, as in the case previously described. In some other applications, like shown in the picture in the right lower part of the slide, a transducer can be screwed through filleting to the chamber into which the pressure must be measured. For such a kind of situations, the previously done considerations can apply in the same way as well. Another concept to measure the pressure features the transformation of the measurement into another one featuring the detection of the displacement of a particular object. In this case, specifically, we can consider an example like the one that we already have seen in the previous slide, exploiting the presence of a chamber into which a fluid with a suitable pressure is inserted, and we want to evaluate the difference in the pressure with respect to the external world. But the foil that is mounted in the window in one of the faces of the box of the chamber is shaped in two particular way, like that shown in the picture in slide 70-75. In this case, the movement of the foil can be measured by means of a suitable linear position transducer, like those we have seen at the beginning of the course. For example, the electro-optical transducer could be okay, but also the typical transducer that we have used several times with the electromagnetic coupling. Due to the difference in the pressure inside and outside the chamber, the foil oscillates, and the displacement that it makes during these oscillations can be measured in a reliable way, considering also the particular shape that characterizes the foil, as we have already said. Looking at the picture, in fact, we see that the foil is equipped with some bellows that avoid the curvature effect due to the pressure exerted on the surface of the foil itself. In fact, through the presence of the bellows, the movement of the foil will be, let's say, in practice linear, and the alignment with respect to the walls will be vertical. Instead, without the bellows, the part of the foil under the effect of the pressure would feature a curvature, and this could introduce some errors in the measurement of the displacement made through the transducer. The foil can also be seen like a spring that exerts an opposition to the movement, characterized by an elasticity coefficient K and a section A, on which the action of the force due to the difference in the pressures is exerted. K, on the basis of the Hooke law, is given by the ratio between the force and the entity of the displacement, and the entity of the displacement will be expressed by the ratio of the section divided by the constant multiplied by the difference in the pressures, since the product of the pressures and the section is, as we well know, the force exerted on the surface. The last recipe, therefore, shows the direct relationship between the measurement of the pressure and the value of dx of the displacement that is detected by means of the linear position transducer. the sensor is quite linear. There is only the offset in the measurement due to the pressure P0 that can be easily eliminated during the calibration phase of the transducer itself. Finally, we see a particular kind of transducer called Bourdon tube that transforms a variation in the pressure inside a tube into an angular movement that can be detected through one of the transducers that we well know, for example, the potentiometer or even an absolute encoder or an incremental encoder. We have a tube into which a suitable fluid is inserted at a certain pressure. The idea is that we want to measure the variations in the pressure of the fluid. The tube is characterized by an elliptical section wounded so as to, let's say, carry out a spiral. The elliptical section, if subject to pressure, tends to become circular. You see in the picture in slide 76 the elliptic section. The particular shape of the section introduces a gradient in the distribution of the forces on the surface of the tube, of the internal tube that we are considering. And the gradient, of course, is due to the fact that the part of the section, of the internal section that is horizontal, is more extended than the part of the internal section that is vertical. So forces due to the distribution of the pressure exist more oriented into a certain direction than in another one. This causes a difference in the distribution of these forces that tend to cause an unfolding of the spiral. The unfolding, due to the particular shape of the spiral, turns out into a rotational movement, and if we connect, let's say, an arrow in the center of such a kind of spiral, the point of this arrow, the edge of this arrow, will rotate clockwise or counterclockwise depending on the particular variation in the pressure that we are measuring. For example, in the picture you see a blue arrow that corresponds to a rotation counterclockwise in correspondence to a variation in the internal pressure of the tube due to the introduction of more fluid. Instead, the rotation could be clockwise, like shown by the red arrow, if the pressure diminishes. An angular transducer can be mounted together with the axis around which the folding and unfolding takes place, and clearly the movement of the spiral will be transformed into an angular displacement that can be measured through these classic transducers that we well know, and through them can be detected by a microprocessor. The next section is devoted to the description of the so-called flow meters, transducers that measure the flow rate of a fluid within a tube. The situation that we are facing considers a stream that flows within a tube with a mass flow rate Fm or a volume flow rate Fv. Fm is defined as the derivative function of the quantity of mass of fluid that flows in a time dt in the tube section. Conversely, the flow rate of the volume is defined as the infinitesimal quantity of volume of a fluid that flows in the infinitesimal time in the tube section. The relationship between the mass flow rate and the volume flow rate is the same that relates mass and volume, that is the density. So we can express the mass flow rate as the product of the density times the volume flow rate. Notice that in this expression we assume that the density is constant. So as the measurement of the volume flow rate or of the mass flow rate is considered equivalent. This is not true for a gas, for example, into which we know that the volume changes depending on the pressure. That is, that all the gases feature greater compressibility. Between mass and volume flow rate, the easiest measurement is typically the second one, because it can be obtained through the measurement of a velocity. In fact, the volume flow rate can be also defined as the product of the section of the tube, the effective section of the tube is better to say, into which the stream flows, time the average velocity of the fluid itself in the section. About this, we will see in the next lesson a description of the profile of the velocity that is not uniform considering all the section. So it is very correct to write the average velocity instead the velocity point for every point of the section, I mean. If the flow meter is coupled with a pressure transducer from which the density can be obtained by means of the Bernoulli law, we will have a mass flow meter. We only deal in the next lesson with the volumetric flow meters working by hypothesis at a constant volume.